time for Ask an Expert. Every weekday at this time, we're giving you direct access to top experts who are studying the pandemic. Today, Johnson & Johnson has requested full authorization for its vaccine and hopes to add boosters to increase efficacy. To answer your questions about vaccines, we're joined live on the KCBS Ring Central Newsline by Dr. Monica Gandhi, Professor of Medicine and Associate Chief of Infectious Diseases at UCSF. If you have a question you want answered, email us at askus@kcbsradio.com. Dr. Gandhi, thanks very much for joining us. So Johnson & Johnson is going to have a booster as well. And I remember when Johnson & Johnson was the one-and-done shot that a lot of people wanted to get, and now it seems like we're not being able to see that.
Right. So, I mean, essentially what's going on is that of all the vaccines, actually of Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson, Johnson & Johnson is the one that has the lowest effectiveness in hospitalization data as published by the CDC. This was about 2 weeks ago. They looked at enduring protection against hospitalization with Moderna, Pfizer, and Johnson & Johnson. And the three rates were 93% protection with Moderna, 88% with Pfizer, but down to 71% protection from hospitalization with the one shot Johnson & Johnson. So it's actually that data that I'm most concerned about, as opposed to the increases your antibody data with that Johnson & Johnson has shown with the second shot, because it really shows that of all the three that I would think about boosting, I absolutely agree that Johnson & Johnson needs a second dose because of the there's not many vaccines that are only one dose, probably only yellow fever in the whole world. And even that, if you go into places of high circulation, we use it. So this is the one on October 15th when it's reviewed that's likely to be reviewed favorably to get a second dose.
Dr. Gandhi, I know there has been debate over whether you can mix and match booster shots. If you had Moderna, you could take Pfizer. Where are we on that?
So, you know, there is data from at least the UK when you have what's called a DNA adenovirus vaccine, which is the two biggest examples are Johnson & Johnson and AstraZeneca. And then you have an mRNA vaccine, which, of course, are Pfizer and Moderna. If you put those together, you have an increased immunogenicity or even a better immune response if you what they call mix and match. So we think that this extrapolation, Johnson & Johnson with an mRNA would be a great combination, kind of extrapolating from the AstraZeneca data.
I remember when we had Johnson & Johnson, a lot of people were saying that, you know, that was the one they went to go get, because at that point we're like, we'll get whatever we can get. There are some experts who say, you know, you are protected if the vaccines keep you from being hospitalized or getting really, really sick. Now that we've got these vaccines, there are people who say, well, I want the one that keeps me from getting ill at all.
Well, it's a really great question, because if we had managed to tamp down transmission in the United States, or even worldwide, we wouldn't even be exposed to a lot of circulating virus to even get mildly ill. We had about 70 million Americans who are eligible for the vaccine who declined the vaccine, and our transmission rates are much higher than other equivalent European countries or even Latin American countries that are vaccinating faster than we. So we had just more circulating virus. So in a way, you're just more likely even to get a mild breakthrough, which is why boosting, you know, will prevent that. However, the enduring protection, except with Johnson & Johnson, just one shot, against hospitalizations and severe disease from Pfizer and Moderna are still there. And it has to do with how the immune system works.
There were side effects from, you know, the first couple of shots. I had the Moderna and remember some soreness and maybe a little bit of cold-like symptoms. For a booster shot, what can we expect as far as side effects go?
Yes, I mean, there was a study both in the UK and Israel that didn't see that there was many more side effects than what you just described for the third shot. If it is a two-shot series and then you do a third shot, that wouldn't be Johnson & Johnson. That's a two-shot. But wait, if you can, for the recommendation is really to wait for 6 months after the second shot, because really you are you're kind of having your immune system go down, and you don't want to have major side effects if you get it too soon to your second shot. So do wait and take that time.
Okay, so do you have to wait between getting a COVID booster and some other vaccine like flu?
So there was a large study out of the UK that looked like flu and COVID can be given simultaneously. And there were two things that they looked at. One was adverse effects. So there was no worse adverse effects because flu is really a very well tolerated vaccine, though COVID does cause more side effects. But the second is, did they looked at, were there any problems with antibody production? Were you reducing the effectiveness of one by giving them together? And they both had equal, even if you gave them together, you still had nice production of antibodies for both flu and COVID. So you can get them at the same time. To be honest, if you're someone who has severe side effects to a flu vaccine, why not space it out from COVID? Three weeks.
We are speaking to Dr. Monica Gandhi, professor of medicine and associate chief of infectious diseases at UCSF. If you have a question you want answered, email us now at askus@kcbsradio.com. We have a question from a listener who says, I received my third booster shot and was very unwell for 36 hours. Does the reaction have any significance? Some people are saying that's how you know that my body is creating antibodies. Is this true?
Well, this has been, when we first started getting COVID vaccines, people were saying, oh, I'm so happy I got a bad reaction because that means that I had a good immune response. There was actually no association between you having a sore arm and not feeling well and your level of protection, because they went back and looked in the clinical trials, and even people who didn't have a severe reaction had great protection. So it's not really predictive that you're going to have a good response. So either way, you're okay.
Here's another email question. This person says, I'm 75. In the last 18 months, I had a heart attack, had two stents put in, a renal stent, also suffers from COPD, chronic liver disorder, had the second Moderna shot on February 14th and signed up for another shot next week. He or she is asking, should I get it or wait till Moderna booster is approved? Nervous because the booster is not officially approved, but also says three doctors said get the booster.
So this is a great question, and I do have to say that we did a terrible job, I think, in this country just confusing people with the booster discussion. Really, the populations for which it has the most effectiveness is immunocompromised individuals and over 65. And then if you're less than 65, really talk to your doctor about if you think you need it. In this case, this individual is over 65 and has other medical conditions that can predispose to COVID. So this, it really is a good idea to get the booster. But you can either get the Pfizer, which is 30 micrograms, or if you want to wait for the Moderna, it's coming. The Moderna booster is going to be 50 micrograms, which is half the dose of the original one you got. And the FDA is reviewing that this month. Three things the FDA is reviewing this month: the 5 to 11 vaccine for children, the Johnson & Johnson second dose, and the Moderna 50 microgram booster. So you can either wait if you liked the Moderna, or you can go ahead and get the Pfizer 30 microgram. It really is probably immaterial either way, but you should get it.
Yeah, it sounds like we're in for a lot of changes this month, or at least a lot of approvals, and that, you know, can also serve to confuse more people, because, you know, what people are asking us now is, well, with all of these vaccines approvals and higher vaccination rates, especially here in the Bay Area, how much longer are we going to be living with, you know, a pandemic?
I will tell you that the Bay Area is doing extremely well, and I think that's pretty clear to everyone. We have rates of 84%, 80% high vaccination rates. What have we seen as a result? Delta hit us after June 15th, no question. But our cases went up, but our hospitalization stayed manageable. Why? Because we had the profound immunity from already having high vaccination rates. Then as cases went up, cases went down, not only just because we increased vaccination, but unfortunately people who had declined to vaccinate got natural immunity, and that does bring down cases. Our cases are very low now. We are doing extremely well. We're equivalent to countries that have fully opened and are back to normal life, like Denmark, Norway, Portugal, Ireland. We are at those levels of high vaccination. So when you say the word pandemic or endemic, The word pandemic means it's multiple continents affecting. Epidemic means it's a really high level. And endemic, when you bring down the cases down to very low and you have high immunity in the population, is where we're going with this virus. And the Bay Area of all places in the country is getting there first.
So when would you say we would get to the point where we could see regulations relaxing and we could get to be like Denmark and Norway?
Well, it is a societal decision in the sense that Denmark, Norway, who opened up on September 10th and September 25th, respectively, and I mean opened up without any restrictions at all, no masks indoors as a mandate, they made that decision at rates of vaccination that were a little bit lower than us here in California. So Denmark was about where we were, 74%, and Norway was actually at 67%. So that was a decision they made. They opened up their societies. What have they seen since? Well, we have 4 weeks of data almost now from Denmark. Great continuation of low hospitalizations, really doing well. The cases went up a little bit when they fully opened, but their hospitalization stayed low. That's immunity, really doing well. So the California opening fully, or, you know, not having mass mandates, frankly, is going to be a societal policy health officer's decision. But if we emulated other countries, we could do it now.
That's California. But there are other states that refuse to do that. And, you know, we do travel back and forth. So what's the long-term impact of that?
Well, so the important thing that to note is that cases are declining everywhere, not just in California, though California has done so well because of our high vaccination rates. Cases are declining in the South, not because of higher vaccination rates, unfortunately, but because of natural immunity. Cases are declining everywhere except the upper Midwest in the United States. They are also declining worldwide. They're down by 33%. Deaths have also declined by 15% worldwide. Why? Because it's a highly transmissible variant and it's seeking out a lot of people, Delta, and there's a lot of immunity going on. When we get to a place where we feel like the epidemic is over in the United States, you're right, it's very uncomfortable sitting in California and still having places that are having high hospitalizations. You can't really feel we're safe until our whole country is safe. So it may be a United States decision once we get to a certain case rate. What is that number? Dr. Fauci has said 10,000. Other people want to look at hospitalizations. There is going to be this time where it's we'll know.